This week on Vaticano, from the jungles of Cambodia, experience the beauty of the Global Church on World Mission Sunday. Learn about how the Vatican museums use art to evangelize. And travel to the island of Gotland, Sweden, for the inaugural EWTN Gotland Forum, a seminar on the Christian roots of Europe. Vaticano starts now.
War is always a defeat. It is a destruction of human fraternity. Brothers, stop. Stop.
On October the 22nd, Pope Francis found strong words condemning the atrocities of war. Briefly afterwards, he called U.S. President Joe Biden to discuss various current conflicts and identify, as he said, paths to peace. Over the last year, Pope Francis has used every opportunity to speak out for peace, be it in Ukraine, in Armenia, or most recently, in the Holy Land.
I am very concerned, grieved. I pray, and I am close to all those who are suffering, the hostages, the wounded, the victims, and their families.
Since the beginning of the Russian invasion into Ukraine in February of 2022, the Holy Father has urged both aggressors and the invaded to work together on ending the atrocities. He sent the Archbishop of Bologna, Cardinal Matteo Zuppi, as his special envoy to broker peace between Moscow and Kiev. Speaking to both sides, Pope Francis earned criticism from many. Unimpressed by this, he continued to advocate for those suffering most from the bombardments and the violence, civilians, including the elderly and children. With Armenia and the Holy Land, two new violent conflicts erupted. Before Azerbaijan invaded the Armenian Nagorno-Karabakh region, Pope Francis called for dialogue between the nations.
I have been following the dramatic situation of the displaced people in Nagorno-Karabakh in recent days, and I renew my call for dialogue between Azerbaijan and Armenia.
A week later, horrific images went across the globe when the terror organization Hamas attacked Israel by air, sea, and land. Also on this conflict, Pope Francis immediately responded.
Let the attacks and weapons cease, please, because it must be understood that terrorism and war bring no solutions, but only to the death and suffering of many innocent lives.
While condemning all acts of terrorism, Pope Francis insisted also in this conflict to continue dialogue. The strategy of always reaching out to two parties involved in a conflict is the red thread in Pope Francis's diplomacy. This isn't always welcomed, especially when there's a clear aggressor who started the violence. Regardless, the Holy Father continues to keep channels open with all parties in order to build bridges between opposing forces. He is, after all, the Pontifex, Latin for builder of bridges. On October the 24th, the last week of the Synod began. The fathers and mothers at the Synod commenced the week with discussions on the Letter to the People of God, a letter or document that the Synod of Bishops has traditionally issued at the conclusion of its work, addressing the faithful worldwide. This message is distinct from the synthesis document, and it will encompass significant themes of peace and migration. Cardinal Jean-Claude Hollerich, the Relator General of the Synod, introduced the perspective of a roadmap toward the second stage of the Synod in his inaugural speech. On October the 25th, the General Congregation took place, during which the Relator General presented and delivered the draft of the synthesis report. In the afternoon, another General Congregation with various free interventions followed. This week, they discussed in smaller circles the synthesis report. Methods and steps for the next phase of the synodal process were also addressed. On October the 28th, the last working day of the Synod, the synthesis report was read in the Assembly during morning and afternoon sessions before the final approval. This year's Synodal Assembly was then officially concluded on Sunday, October the 29th, with Holy Mass in St. Peter's Square with Pope Francis. The decisive phase of the Synod on Synodality will start in October of 2024.
Hello and welcome to this week's Vatican Updates, the most important news from Pope Francis and the Vatican. Pope Francis and U.S. President Joe Biden spoke by phone to discuss the latest developments in the Israel and Gaza, according to a statement from the White House. The Holy See press office said the phone call lasted about 20 minutes and focused on conflicting situations in the world and the need to identify paths to peace. The Pope and the President also discussed the need to prevent escalation in the region and to work towards a durable peace in the Middle East, the White House said. The Nicaraguan regime reported that it has released 12 priests it had imprisoned and sent them to the Vatican after an agreement was reached with the authorities of the Catholic Church. In a press release, the government announced that the release of the priests took place after fruitful conversations with the Holy See. Bishop Ronaldo Alvarez of the Diocese of Matagalpa, who was sentenced on February 10th to 26 years and 4 months in prison, was not among those released. Pope Francis accepted the resignation of 59-year-old Polish Bishop Gregor Kazak. Kazak, who led the Southern Polish Diocese of Sosnowiec since 2009, had recently faced blowback from local media for his response to a priest of his diocese allegedly being caught hosting an orgy with a male prostitute at the end of August. "I ask everyone to forgive my human limitations," the bishop said in a statement. "If I have offended anyone or neglected anything, I am very sorry for it." Ireland's President Michael Higgins, in a Vatican ceremony, paid tribute to Monsignor Hugh O'Flaherty, an Irish priest who hid Italian Jews from the Nazis and went on to baptize the former head of the Gestapo in Rome. The wreath-laying ceremony in the Vatican's Teutonic Cemetery marked the 60th anniversary of O'Flaherty's death on October 30, 1963. New data from the Vatican shows that Africa added to the greatest number of Catholics in 2021, out of all the continents, and that of all the world's continents registered at least a modest increase in the number of Catholics in 2021, except for Europe, which continued a year-long decline. The annual report by the Vatican's Fides News Agency shows that Catholics in the world are numbered 1,375,852,000 people at the end of 2021, with an overall increase of 16.2 million compared with the previous year. Thank you for watching this week's Vaticano Updates. I'm Matthew Santucci for EWTN Vaticano.
In a few moments, we'll be back with more on Vaticano.
Everything. I'm not here to build a little Paris or a little New York, you know. I'm here to live among different people, a people which is not mine, a culture which is not mine.
Father Will Conker is a member of the Society of Foreign Missions of Paris, a Catholic missionary organization in direct connection with the Holy See.
It is not my country. I'm not here because I'm French or American. I'm here because I'm a disciple of Jesus Christ, to serve another people. I'm not here for any nationalistic gain or any kind of political ambition. I'm here to proclaim to a nation which is not mine, in which I'm called to love because I believe that God has chosen this nation to be part of his kingdom.
Since its foundation 360 years ago, the Society has sent more than 4,200 missionaries to Asia and North America. Their mission includes adapting to local customs and languages and developing a native clergy while keeping close contacts with Rome.
I've been here for almost 4 years now, the three first years, and now I'm beginning a new mission here on the seashore of Cambodia in a town called Sihanoukville, and all the way to the Thai border where there's our furthest mission called Koh Kong. So I'm just beginning, but it's called to be a lifelong mission.
Becoming a missionary is an essential dimension to being a Catholic. Every Catholic is a missionary by baptism. World Mission Sunday is the one Sunday in the year when the Mass is celebrated exclusively for missionary activity. It falls on the penultimate Sunday in October. This year, it fell on October the 22nd.
Today, we celebrate World Mission Sunday, which has a theme, Hearts on Fire, Feet on the Move. Two images that say everything. I urge everyone in the dioceses and in the parishes to participate actively.
It was created by Pope Pius XI in 1926 as the Day of Prayer for Missions. World Mission Sunday is a day set aside for the Catholic Church throughout the world to publicly renew its commitment to the missionary movement.
To understand the origins of World Mission Day or Sunday, you have to understand the origins of the Pontifical Mission Societies because they are linked. The Pontifical Mission Society, for example, for the Propagation of the Faith, which is the first society that was created by Blessed Pauline Jaricot in 1822, became a worldwide network of prayer, of formation, of information, and material sharing amongst churches for the work of evangelization, and especially in areas of first evangelization and planting of new churches. And this grew and grew and grew, and in 1922, Pope Pius XI decided to make the three societies pontifical, which means he wanted them to have universal significance and a place, permanent place in the universal church, and therefore in every local church. And therefore, World Mission Sunday, or World Mission Day, was instituted specifically for the assistance and for the work of the Pontifical Mission Society for the propagation of the faith. In other words, for sharing the faith and creating new churches in mission lands.
World Mission Day is more relevant than ever now because mission territory lies at your feet the minute you walk out the church door.
I think every church in the world now is missionary, has to be missionary, whether it's in Toronto or Kraków, Poland, or in Addis Ababa in Ethiopia. We're all churches must be missionary. A missionary church is one that looks beyond its own needs. It looks outside and looks at the needs of the world that is in dying need of the gospel.
Since the fall of communism in the 1990s, the church in Cambodia has risen from the rubble, mainly thanks to the efforts of foreign missionaries like Father Will, building schools and educating children and caring for the poor, sick, and elderly. Since the country's main religion is Theravada Buddhism, engaging in interreligious dialogue has also proven to be a necessary task to be undertaken by the missionaries.
Sometimes people tell me, oh, William, have they converted? Have they been baptized? What's the point of this dialogue? When are they becoming Christian? I say, of course, my greatest joy would be for them to know the love of God. But all I can do is start walking with them. That's what we're doing, and it's a long path, but I think it's a beautiful path, and on the journey, God is already there with us.
While currently building a study center, Father Will also hopes to help form a scout group and a musical academy. Despite the many difficulties the missionaries in Cambodia are facing, Father Will has a great hope for the country. In fact, just recently, two young Cambodian men decided to enter the seminary.
And missionaries need to be patient because the time of God is not necessarily our timing. All we are called to do is proclaim the good news. Conversion is God's grace. And seeing beautiful things happen here is not something that we can decide on. We just have to open our eyes to God's work. And God is working. God is working. God wants all people to come to His kingdom in His own time.
In the heart of Rome, millions of people from all corners of the globe make a pilgrimage to the Vatican Museums every year. These museums house some of the world's most magnificent artistic and cultural treasures. But beyond the breathtaking masterpieces, there's a deeper purpose, a mission of faith and education.
Every year, millions of people come to visit the Vatican Museums in the heart of Rome. Sister Emanuela Edwards is the head of the didactic office. Sister, could you explain to us a little bit what that exactly means and what your role entails?
Of course. My role is about creating programs for the schools to come into the Vatican Museums in order to use the collection for the education. And so we have the possibility for school groups, university groups to come and visit the museum. And my job is to create content and tours which support their educational programs. In addition, we also look after those special visitors who come to the museum, those who have disabilities, so that they too can enjoy the museums of the Holy Father.
Children and art. Sometimes many might think, well, does that not also contradict each other a little bit? Is there interest on part of the young visitors of the Vatican Museums?
I think the young visitors are some of the most important visitors to the museum, and indeed they teach us so much because they really test the ability of the guide to make these wonderful masterpieces accessible to them, because art attracts everyone. There's no age limit on a great masterpiece. But we have to deliver it in such a way that the young people are interested and are able to engage with the story. For example, every child, I think, finds it fascinating, the story of creation by Michelangelo. And of course, in the Vatican Museums, we have the greatest masterpieces ever created.
So what do you wish that young visitors learn from their visit to the Vatican Museums?
Young visitors, just like every visitor, my greatest desire is that they learn that the wonderful story of the gospel, and so that they take away from the Vatican Museums the knowledge that God loves them.
God loves them. You can see that in the art. So what role does art play also when we talk about evangelization, when we talk about teaching about the gospel?
Art has always been a powerful means used by the church in order to transmit the contents of the faith. From the very earliest times, the church used art in order to transmit the faith, in order to remind people of the faith, and then in order to create devotion to bring them closer to God. And so, if you like, art is a bridge. It's a bridge where people can come to understand the contents of the faith. Pope Benedict, in the opening to the compendium, said that pictures transmit far more than what can be said with words. And this is a powerful means in our society today. How many people enter the Sistine Chapel? Pope Francis calls it a work of evangelization. And so a person may enter the Sistine Chapel without any real religious faith, but in looking at the wonderful masterpieces, all of a sudden, the heart is raised to God.
Sister Manuela, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure. God bless.
We'll be back after a short break with more on Vaticano. In the heart of Gotland, Sweden, a place steeped in the rich tapestry of history, we find ourselves at a forum hosted by EWTN, examining the deep Christian roots of Europe at the intersection of tradition and the ever-evolving story of the Catholic Church.
Why so many churches? I've already mentioned the reason for two of them, the Catholic orders. We had Dominicans, we had Franciscans, we had a Cistercian nunnery just outside the town wall. Franciscans were thrown out during the Reformation, also the Cistercians and the Dominicans. I have a theory. I think it's very easy for people to leave religious beliefs from one generation to another. But it's much more difficult to leave tradition because you want to do the same thing as your forefathers did, but we don't have the belief. We do things because we have always done it, but we don't know why.
Gotland is quite an amazing place. There is a walled city. The whole island, it's full of churches. It shows the incredible flourishment of Christianity in the Middle Ages. So Gotland Island was the best place to start this forum. There is an enormous crisis in our Christianity in Northern Europe, and especially young people are longing for something that is tradition, that is authentic. So we want to help them discover their true ancestors, the Vikings and the Varangians, the Northern Europeans, as they really were, and as they really became when they were became Christians. We had, of course, Cardinal Anders from Stockholm, who is the bishop, and he's actually the first Scandinavian cardinal ever. Your Eminence, there's a lot of young people living in noisy cities and having big trouble in trying to find silence. How can they reconquer that?
I think the first thing is to realize that there is silence within ourselves, that this is a sacred temple where the Trinity lives, thanks to baptism, where there is always adoration and silence, even if on the surface there is noise, because it's very hard to find a place without any noise whatsoever. But if we accept that inside, deep inside, there is always an interior space with silent adoration, then you have conquered.
In the Middle Ages, the common pattern of Christianization was that it was imposed by the rulers. A ruler would adopt Christianity and then would introduce it to his people. At the same time, Gotland was rather an exception. It became really a people's faith. From the beginning, through trade routes, through interactions between different peoples and areas. And I should remind that an important input to the Christianization of Gotland was made by a version of Christianity, which is known as Eastern Christianity, which was, well, Byzantine Christianity, which we now call Orthodoxy. So in this sense, Gotland became really an ecumenical place where West and East met together. At the time, of course, West and East constituted one thing. There was no separation, there was no division yet.
The room we're standing in down here is the first parts of the church was built, and then 20 years ago that part was built. And the relic I'm talking about is in this small cabinet, and it's a small drop of blood from the robe, the habit, that Saint John Paul wore when he was shot at Saint Peter's Square. And after his death and his sainthood, they cut small pieces of the robe and selected churches all over the world. And one of these churches that was selected was this small, small church in Visby. And I think it's so amazing that world history has moved into this small church of Corpus Christi in Visby.